This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Matt Derrick for joining us in studio last hour. I think we talked about football at some point, and that's all you can ask for. If you missed any of it, it'll be up on 810WHB.com, along with all of Matt's work with us, and also the 810 mobile app if you are looking for the podcast later on. This hour will be also, but not yet, because we're still doing it. What are you laughing at, Sterling?
Almost Sports Saturday.
Almost entirely Sports Saturday. That's what it is. I'm Joshua Briscoe. That's basically the name of the night show. If you ever hang around, if you're ever up later than this during the week, you can turn this on and most days hear us. Feel free to turn off your microphone before we make all those loud noises in the control room, Sterling.
I did after.
If you want to hear Sterling in a role that I can only say doesn't suit him less, you can listen to Sterling host 4 to 6 on ESPN Kansas City during the week over on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM, where he doesn't have to push the buttons. Beards takes care of that. So Sterling sounds like a professional, which is why I can blame Sterling for all the times this show collapses this weekend. I can just blame him for all of the catastrophe that's happened on the side of the glass. If you don't know why I can't say the word catastrophe or catastrophic, you can go back and listen to the first hour later on. So I've got Chief stuff that, again, because the week was all like knocked off by a day because the Chiefs are going to Mexico for a Monday night game this week. Obviously not playing tomorrow. Everything got moved back a day, and so we didn't hear from Eric Bieniemy and Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Tobe until yesterday. We usually talk to them on Thursday, and even then, whenever we talk to them on Thursday, Steve Spagnuolo has already like forgotten everything that happened the week before. He just dumps out all of that information and begins working on the next week. So we will talk about some of that stuff, but there are a couple of things that are slightly more pressing at the moment that I wanted to make sure we talked about today because it's newsworthy. The thing that happens today in college football, by the way, Colin Kaepernick had his workout today, and actually still might be going on. I'm not totally sure. I've been on the radio for pretty much, I think it started about as this show did, so I got nothing for you on that yet. Maybe we'll wrap up the show. This whole hour, though, could legitimately just be an hour of infuriating people. It could just be me doing that for the next 52 minutes. Because I have like two or three strong opinions that I have seen represented only perhaps in the minority recently. And I'm going to put them out there and you can decide if you're angry at me or not. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe if you'd like. You can tweet Sterling and give him words of encouragement at HomestretchKC. You tweet Matt Derrick at Matt Derrick. So Tua Tagovailoa went down today with a hip injury that is ending his season and almost certainly ending his career at Alabama. That's the big breaking news from today. It happened on a super average-looking hit, and he was screaming in pain as he was being carried on and off of the cart. He was helicoptered to a hospital, and his season and with almost all the certainty that a season is over, his career in Alabama is done. And I don't know if this is good or bad or fair or unfair, but whenever I saw that news pop up on Twitter before I even saw the play, my very first thought was that could be the end of his career, and someone right now is preparing to tell me on Monday that it's totally fine that he has made, in his career to this point, he has made education. That has been what he has been paid with, and that has been what he will take with him through the future while being the biggest star in college football for, I mean, I would argue longer than just about anybody gets to be because he was good so young. And he's been at Alabama, and he came on in such a brightly lit stage. He's been the biggest star in college football and in our consciousness for a minute now. And some other quarterbacks have chipped in here and there, but There was literally a football team who this offseason structured their team in a way that they would be ready and able to draft him this spring. And now it looks like the Dolphins and tanking for Tua is actually not going to work out. And it also starting to look like the Bengals might end up going for Joe Burrow. And there's lots of other complicating factors there. But Tua has been roundly guaranteed as a pro prospect of the highest order since we've gotten even a medium-sized sample size of him. And because this sport is so inherently violent that on a totally routine football play, his career is in jeopardy. The comparisons have already been made that it's a similar injury to what ended Bo Jackson's career. Now, again, we're in a better place right now in terms of medical knowledge and science. But it's one of those injuries that is dealt with the care that comes with an injury that could be ending the career of a quarterback before he was able to monetize his career. And so, again, I don't know if it's good or bad or fair or unfair, but it's honest. The first thing I thought is that he has been in a system where he has been forced to play without receiving any sort of monetary gain from his stardom, from his likeness, from his performance, while Nick Saban is the highest paid dude in the state, while that program is a absolute behemoth, while you have entire TV networks devoted to the SEC and these shows devoted to college football and entire days of programming throughout America devoted to college football, building these stadiums and these lavish locker rooms and paying these tremendous prices for these coaches on the backs of free labor on the field. Say, oh, it's not free. They're paid an education. Tua has been paid an education, and that is not his value, and you know that. You know that he has been paid in education at a level significantly lower than his value. You know that it happens all throughout college sports because guys do end up getting paid under the table illegally. And so you can say, what's Silvio De Sousa worth if he was actually able to make money off his college career? You know he would make money because he was being offered money. Mitch Lightfoot is redshirting this year for Kansas, and you can't tell me that he couldn't go be the face of some Lawrence car dealership and make a nice little chunk of change while he's still in college, being Mitch Lightfoot local hero. Talking about Zion and Tua, people that have good opinions and good backgrounds and people that I respect say, oh, it only affects this small percentage. First of all, if Tua and Zion can't make their money that they should be worth, that conversation doesn't end by saying, oh, let's just bleep those guys over and then they'll make their money in the pros. Because sometimes they won't. And Tua might not. And Zion and Tua both had opportunities to make money at the height of their stardom. We'll see when Zion comes back. But he hasn't played an NBA game yet. Right now, we're not sure if Tua will play a professional sporting event. And it really is a professional sporting event every time Alabama takes the field because this isn't rec league. Amateurism is a sham on the Division I level. If you want to try to regulate lower levels differently, then so be it. But simply deregulating a little bit will allow you so many more options here. And understanding it only with the guys at the top is still not enough for the larger picture. So again, we don't know if Zion or Tua will ever have their status at the professional level that they had at the college level. Right now for Tua, it seems like that might actually be straight up unlikely. Baker Mayfield is making his money through commercials and all that right now, and even if he's not a starter by the time he ends up getting his second contract, he will have made some money there. But the fact that he couldn't do that while being the most high-profile player in college sports is completely bonkers. The fact that Tua couldn't go do a State Farm commercial with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers is ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous because that's to protect, again, amateurism while they play in these Roman Colosseums, like these incredible pieces of architecture devoted to the bloated nature of this sport because so many people care and it costs so many people money. Those tickets cost money. Those coaches cost money. The players somehow don't. Say, but how do you pay everybody equally? Here's the thing that has struck me today. Okay? Again, Tua and Zion should be able to make all the money that they can in college. Mitch Lightfoot should too. In every industry throughout America, throughout capitalism, someone has said, hey, how are we going to make sure that everyone's paid equally and fairly? We've said, I don't know, and I don't care. We'll figure it out. Everywhere else, in professional sports, and some of them, we have salary caps. But outside of the sports world and in the rest of capitalism, we let the market figure itself out. The idea that this needs to be regulated is in only this way is so foolish because you're not establishing these regulations for how cool LSU's locker room can be or how much Nick Saban can be paid. I don't need this slotted wage scale to be put in place on like virtually any level. Pay these kids in their educations. And frankly, there was a option thrown out there from someone saying, hey, listen, here's the option. If you make money, I still think this comes from a relatively dishonest place, but if you make money while being in college, you have to forfeit your scholarship. And that's fine. I think that's a little bit silly just because you're saying, okay, so now if you're making money elsewhere, the school can make even more money off of you. We'll take this tiny little percentage and take it out of the pot and give that scholarship elsewhere, whatever. That's fine. I don't hate that idea. And you can just allow players to be compensated over a free market as professionals. Even then, you see the schools getting through a loophole of not having to share their revenue with the players in the uniforms who are out there having their livelihoods, their future livelihoods, and their current college careers threatened constantly. But even that is better than what we pretend to have now, which is that somehow this is a fairly bargained system where Tua, as the superstar of college football, and frankly, the superstar of last and this upcoming NFL offseason, that he can go out there and then on a routine play have all sorts of things happening in his hip that is ending his college season and career and could end his professional career before it ever begins. The idea that there's anyone even left at this point who cares to argue that, who thinks that this faux amateurism needs to be in any way protected is totally baffling to me. Totally baffling. Sterling, you've been sort of like leaning towards the microphone at various times, and if you would like to present a counterpoint, I'm ready.
It's not even a counterpoint. I agree with pretty much everything you said.
That's a good start.
I will say one though. You said Tua was forced to play. He's not forced to play.
The system is forced. Here's the thing. He couldn't have gone straight to the NFL though. There is this forced minor league system where he could literally just go do Colin Kaepernick workouts and throw the ball in that regard. But to break the system that egregiously is literally unprecedented in this particular sport.
100% it is, and I just wanted to just say that.
He's not legally forced to, but he cannot go to the next level until he hits a certain age.
The only
option right now that is actually in place is to go play college football.
The one thing I say is I don't know if it should come from all the revenues because yes, you say it'll figure itself out, correct? I understand. But I also think the whole, if Mitch Lightfoot, how much is he getting on the open market from a team paying him? Probably not a lot. If he does stuff for, like you said, the local car dealership,
he would make bank. He would clean up at Salty Iguana.
But guess what, though? College wasn't getting that money to begin with. So why should NCAA even care?
Oh, no, that's fair. No, I think there are two, I would say, and that might be a good clarification to make, I would say there are two sort of sectors of this, and there's the open market in the likeness and endorsement vein, right?
That's what I like.
And then there's the revenue made through the school.
That's what is tricky.
What I would argue is that there's room for both of those to be handing money to the players. Likeness and everything, you're right. The school wouldn't be getting other anyway, so they should keep their damn hands out of it, and regulating that is a fool's errand made by a organization that acts more like a cartel than something that has the student's best interest in mind. So stay out of that. I'm good with that.
Okay.
If you want to go there,
yeah,
that's fine.
That's where I like it.
So then let's talk about the other angle, because I do think that there's room for both of these things. Whenever you're looking, and maybe this has to be, well, how do you regulate how much the quarterback makes versus the offensive lineman, and how much, you know, what we could do that would really help a lot of this? Let these players have agents, and let them unionize. Let there be representation through this. And this gets collectively bargained like it does in every other sport.
Even though it's already currently pretty much four teams that run college football to begin with, it would be even a smaller sector. Alabama's going to have way more money than almost anyone than, say,
sure.
Iowa.
Every professional sport has revenue sharing, though. Revenue sharing happens throughout pro sports. Within individual teams, you figure out what elements that you're willing to pull from here and pull from here. What does the revenue sharing look like from NCAA to individual players?
But then you're going to have an even worse... Just teams will be, it'll be four good teams, even though, again, it's already four good teams for the most part. You pretty much know Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, almost every year is going to be in there.
But everybody in the SEC is making money. Everyone in the Big 12 is making money. These Power 5 teams are making money. Kansas just paid $1 million to get rid of an offensive coordinator they didn't want anymore. KUA was able to afford that. Like, there is money in these things. And yes, Alabama is, and again, like Texas, I would point out.
Texas, yes, would have a lot of money.
They have more money as on an individual basis than these other schools do. But you want to make it, we could have this conversation with basketball, and that those schools change very dramatically.
But then would you have salary caps?
I would say that the first step there would be to have players unionize, and then to have an agreement collectively bargained, just like has happened in every other professional, in every other sport that we watch that regularly fills stadiums with tens of thousands of people. There is a collective bargaining agreement on some level.
Which sports will this include?
You're gonna let that be part of the
bargaining.
You
will include all sports. You're going to include lacrosse with this. You're going to include
sure they can
swimming.
Yes, lacrosse players. For at the schools where lacrosse makes money,
okay,
should have
valid.
A share of the lacrosse revenue.
Okay, valid. I meant, okay, swim teams. How much money is the swim team bringing in?
Probably not any. I imagine
probably
most
costing
are
money.
Losing money.
Exactly. And so how are you going to pay them then?
They get a share of the revenue. If the revenue is zero, then they're not getting money from that. Like, that's fine. So they have their scholarship system in place, and if the swim team, if I'd love to come up with, let's do UConn women's basketball, right?
Valid, yeah.
Profitable. There is money coming in there that should filter to the players. And for the lacrosse team at some school that I don't even know has lacrosse right now, if that is not financially profitable, so be it. And you say, oh, but then more players are going to go to UConn over
yes.
anywhere else. They already do.
But now it's going to be even more. Like, now there's no chance of them going anywhere else.
You're going to, I mean, eventually, you run out of roster spots, though, man. Like, right now, again, Alabama and LSU are already getting all
players
of these recruits, right?
You're going to get holdouts in college basketball. You want holdouts in college basketball? You want holdouts in college
No, because you run out of starting
basketball.
Spots. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can take all of these guys and say, well, you know, why would you go to anywhere other than Duke or Kansas or North Carolina? Because you're not going to get to play Quentin Grimes. Like, he's still going to end up going to Houston or whatever because there are only so many spots. So maybe the depth at Duke is making more money than the starter at Houston. Or, again, if you want to figure out a way that you want to cap this with revenue sharing, which, again, is something that we could be talking about here, and say, all right, here's how revenue sharing works. We're gonna have these pieces of the pie that are going to go just through men's college basketball and football. Okay, let's take everything else out of this. Let's talk about these two sports for a second. If you want, and we're letting these different teams unionize, and they are getting representation in these rooms, saying, okay, we are now figuring out of each of these teams in these Power Five conferences, we're going cash making sports in cash making conferences. we are now bringing these teams together. We are figuring out what section there that goes to the players, whatever it is that's collectively bargained, right? And we're figuring out if they get pensions and if they can have retirement and all of those things. And then now, of this segment, here is what gets shared, here's what stays in the school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, this is all the conversation that I don't think is even lined up yet. We have the likeness conversation needs to be opened up completely. See, moving there eventually, but this is the next one to have.
Well, then, if you do this, like you were talking about players, and there's roster spots. Say, for example, MPJ. Michael Porter Jr. could have gone anywhere he wanted.
Yep.
He's not going to Mizzou if this is the option. Then he would have gone to KU, or he would have gone to Kentucky or North Carolina. Mizzou would never
have had that option. I mean, I don't know.
He would have made way more money at KU than he would have made at Mizzou. We know this. I'm a Mizzou guy. I went to Mizzou.
Sure. Yeah.
And I can recognize that we're not on the same level.
And one that is totally stacked where individual teams get to pay different amounts of money. If you want to put in some sort of capping, which again, which is what I just laid out there, some sort of cap would be totally fine with me. Usually whenever someone brings up salary caps in college sports, John
Morant would not have gone to Murray State.
John Morant wouldn't have gone to Murray State without there being money there on anyway. But yes, fine.
That's my point. So you want to ruin these teams?
Let's go ahead. Let's follow the revenue sharing option that I've laid out there. Let's extend the salary cap over the league, and now John Morant can go make all the money at Murray State.
But he would never go to Murray State.
Be sixth at Duke.
What Murray State? I don't even know their conference. What state is what conference? That conference.
It's the MacWack.
Okay. Well, that conference is not making anywhere near a Power 5 conference revenue
sharing. That's true. Actually, that's true. Outside of Power 5, there's going to be significant problems.
So then Murray State, they're not getting John Morant.
Yeah, you can go ahead and relegate them into a different bracket,
yeah.
Essentially. Yes, that's true. That will happen.
Yeah. I still think likeness, though, that has to happen. The fact that hasn't blows my mind. They're going to
continue dragging their feet, and there was absolutely no altruism in the NCAA's steps in that direction because their hand was finally forced. But yeah, no, I'm saying that's we're talking about like step 10 right now. Because I think the first 9 steps are pretty good to go. Where Mitch Lightfoot should be the face of the salty iguana, and Tua should be able to make millions in Tuscaloosa if he can while he's in college. I have literally no problem with that. That in no way whatsoever adjusts what I believe to be the sanctity of college sports. Like, I think that is at this point a dishonest argument. The thing about like the implications of salary caps and trying to maintain an even playing field in a sport that, by the way, is already not even. Why doesn't everyone already go to Duke? I think that's a part of this conversation that actually could be revisited. Say, well, everyone wants to go to Duke and make more money. I'll go to Duke right now and get more TV time. Why does John Morant not go to a bigger school anyway? Why does Michael Porter Jr. go to Mizzou at all? How does Memphis end up with all these guys? We're finding out. We're finding out as how. But they got Penny Hardaway. Penny Hardaway can still bring dudes over whenever. And again, I understand that if you're paying, if the ninth guy on the Kansas roster is making more than the first in Iowa State, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But in the same conference, I would not be a huge fan of a system that allowed that, which is, again, why I think that you have to look at revenue sharing, and maybe that's something you can actually look at over both of those cash-making sports and see if you can find a little bit of middle ground there where Alabama football helps out SEC basketball a little bit. Kentucky basketball is carrying more than Kentucky football is. I don't know. I am not an economist in that. And that's why I would say the most important thing to me is that these players have representation and that the NCAA has to act as a league as opposed to this one judge, jury, executioner trio here that gets to make all the rules and enforce all the rules at their whim. Because whenever you have representation for these players and you have agents, you get economists, of which I am not one.
The one thing I will say, I saw a very interesting stat. It was about, I think it was either 37 schools or 37 teams, individual sports, in college were only profitable. Only 37 out of all college sports, only 37 were actually profitable. Which, put that into a just comparison of how many sports, how many schools there are.
Sure.
If only 37 are profitable, how's that going to work out?
How's LSU's locker room have a TV for every nameplate?
That's probably a part that makes it not profitable, some of these schools, I would assume.
Well, the definition of profitable, I would have a question for. The amount of money, and again, whenever you have football teams that are helping to fund lacrosse programs and everything like that, again, those are things that I would have no problem with being considered. I think that Alabama football should in part foot the bill for Alabama soccer, right? I think in an ideal world you would still have the cash making branches of this be helping other true student athletes, legitimate student athletes, and not faux professionals be able to play sports in college. I don't want the support of that to go away, which is, again, why I would say the fact that we don't have even a stronger push for unionizing is wild to me. And the fact that that's not even like a large part of the conversation is genuinely stunning. Because whenever you start having players get representation, they begin to have a seat in the meetings that establishes the fine details of parts like this. And right now, whenever you and me are here at 5:30 on a Saturday trying to hash out a CBA, we've probably spoken over our heads and our economic degrees, because that's not what our job is.
Yeah, I failed economics once.
I didn't get an A in my economics class. That was a big L for me. I think that was a B plus for my like intro to it was like the first semester of my senior year, and I was
in fairness, there's an 8 a.m. class across campus. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's tough.
You think I'm going to swing that?
That's tough. Especially you, I don't think you're going to.
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah, no, I didn't know you in college, which is why I don't straight up refuse to work with you now. It's because I didn't have to see whatever was happening back then. I have at least some amount of separation between past you and current you, and I'm extremely grateful for it. That train wreck is Sterling Holmes. I'm Joshua Briscoe. More Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 right after this.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, if that last segment didn't piss you off, here's segment two of this hour. I want to talk about the Browns and Steelers thing.
PC, bro.
I want to talk about this. I want to talk about Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph and football a little bit. Just here on the TV in front of me, I've not been paying close attention, but somebody from K-State got whacked and then was just laying down motionless on the field for a good 30 seconds before someone eventually grabbed them and pulled them up. Also, Sterling, your microphone's still on, which I only know because that fan is so damn loud. Just a heads up. Just trying to help you out. Fan is so loud.
I'm used to the ESPN Kansas City studio.
You were going to leave your microphone on. It doesn't sound like you were briefly living in a wind tunnel.
A wind tunnel or by an airplane.
Yeah. This sounds like, it sounds like every one of those press conferences that happens while the president is like walking onto, like standing underneath a helicopter. What do you think about Ukraine? Yeah, it's, what happens every time I turn on the microphone. So I want to talk about Thursday Night Football. I'm about to take a losing position, is what's happening here. All right? Just give everybody, get ready. Myles Garrett was totally justified. I'm kidding. That's not the take. I'm kidding, but the face that Sterling made was hilarious. That's not actually the take. But now that you know that's not the take, the one that follows isn't going to be quite as alarming. Here's the actual thing. All of the tweets from, like, Adam Schefter, where he was, like, calling it unbelievable and unimaginable and tweeted simply the word assault. And every tweet like that from every... I like Schefter. Not just as a reporter, but, like, his, like, radio appearances are good. But from everybody in the sport who says something like, this is the most barbaric thing I've ever seen on a football field. All of those make me chuckle. And actually, this is now even easier to talk about after Tua had his entire hip, like, maimed on a routine tackle today. And it happens to everybody in football all the time. Mason Rudolph was in the concussion protocol at one point this year, and it was just from playing football. And so, listen, the Myles Garrett thing is different, okay? It's different. Yanking someone's helmet off and then hitting them with their own helmet is different, and it's wild. Although I do think there's something similar that happened in the preseason with the Dolphins. Anyway, this is wild, and to happen in prime time, and everyone sees it's the end of a game, and then Pouncey comes in and just immediately throwing hands. It's a bad look. Myles Garrett was in the wrong. I don't have no problem with him being suspended for the rest of the season. That's fine. I think if you think it should be a lifetime ban, like, you've kind of lost the plot of what you're watching. It's fine. But it's different and it's wild. And okay, we good on that front. I said it, I made a joke at the beginning about Myles Garrett being justified. Everybody calm down. It wasn't, okay? It was a crazy thing that he did that he has been punished for, will continue to be punished for, and should be punished for, okay? There's the groundwork that I've laid out. However, the idea that this is the league that has a commercial running right now that shows Ryan Shazier like walking around as this like incredible triumph, which in the grand scheme of things, like from the point of his injury to now, of course it is. It's a tremendous triumph. But like he came out for the NFL draft, like announce a pick or whatever. And this is a league that celebrates that the full scope of that story as, again, this incredible triumph and this show of the human spirit and the backing of football from a game that we also almost killed him. We saw Mason Rudolph stand up with that concussion a couple of weeks ago after they had taken off his face mask and the cart was broken, so they had to like walk him off the field while he was wearing his helmet minus the face mask, and you could tell his brain had been scrambled. Like, we're talking about the same dude here. I feel like there have been two or three stories in the last few months of boxers who die after suffering traumatic head injuries in the boxing ring. And again, you can save your breath. Those are plays that occur within the rules and the context of the sport. Totally. And so this is, again, this is different because it looks different and it is not a part of the game as it's designed. But I'm just telling you that what you saw in that game, the fight at the end of Thursday Night Football, was less physically damaging to Mason Rudolph's brain than the hit he took a few weeks ago, and that everyone on a football field takes on a weekly basis. And so, yes, situationally, it's different and it's bad, and it's why Myles Garrett is getting suspended for a long time. And every dude who delivers a subconcussive hit throughout the sport doesn't get suspended because they shouldn't. But it's not as far removed from what you cheer as you probably think that it is. And it's not even as violent as what you see on a regular basis. Like, the other guy that we've sort of rallied around this way, like, culturally, is Vontaze Burfict. Like, bleep that guy, right? He's basically done for years what Myles Garrett did, but he just, the helmet was still on his head as opposed to in his hand. And again, like, that's a guy who we finally said, all right, 74 times is enough, Vontaze. You gotta go. It's just, to me, it's not the actual act or the fight that I have any interest in defending at all whatsoever. I don't. But the pearl clutching of, like, this is, I can't even believe I'm seeing something this violent on the screen in front of me, especially on Thursday Night Football, where dudes just drop like flies. There was a play earlier in that game, I think Juju Smith-Schuster got crumpled. It's exceptional because it looked different, and I just think that we try to do a better job of separating things that look that different without having to think about how violent the sport inherently is. And so it made me think about that again. The whole fight and the whole swinging the helmet as a weapon thing just made me revisit that again. We all saw the traumatic head injury that Mason Rudolph suffered this season, and it wasn't on that play. It wasn't from that fight. Sterling, you've been shaking your head this entire time.
Because if that would have landed,
It landed. I mean, it hit him in the head.
No, barely. That thing grazed him.
It hit him pretty hard. I wouldn't want to be hit
and
by
it
like
was,
that.
And it wasn't. I wouldn't want to be hit by either. You shouldn't have to worry about someone hitting you in the head with a helmet when you're helmetless. Also, it hit him with the quote-unquote soft part of the helmet.
It hit him with the edge. Yeah.
If that would have connected, he would. This would be.
Do you think that I've said
story.
At any point here that I have said that that seemed cool and fun and not punishable?
No, you're
it
not.
Is, and it, but and it you, is, you, and it was, said, and it has
it,
been.
You said it was comparable to a normal hit. You
yes.
said it was comparable. Disagree.
It is.
So you're saying then they should just.
What you
what,
see,
then why would you wear helmets then?
What you see.
Then why would you wear helmets if it's comparable?
Because it's also not a dude leaping into you with all of the force of his own head behind
it's
it.
It's a 275 pound DN.
And what I'm telling you is that is a thing that we saw. This time, and we've all lost our minds, but while I sit here right now, I can see there are two football games on in front of me, and I'm telling you that over the course of this game, I could find you, I might be able to find 100 over these two football games of instances saying, that was not good for that dude's brain, and neither was this, and neither was this. But again, whenever you're looking within the structure of the sport, that kind of stuff is normal. What we saw just didn't look normal. I'm telling you that the impact of it is going to be on par with the thing that with the hit that crumpled Juju Smith-Schuster in that same game, with the thing that had Mason Rudolph stumbling off of the field earlier this season. It's bad, man. It's not good, but football is packed with those moments. I think to go unthinkable, unimaginable, which is what Schefter tweeted, to say unthinkable, unimaginable, and to go, I don't know if I would. I don't know if I can watch this anymore, and then to turn college football back on today, where the violence is just in the structure. I think it was Pablo Torre that said that was Mason Rudolph's non-consensual concussion, as opposed to the one that happened earlier in the season that he was essentially on the hook for, because it happened in the structure of the game. It just made me think about the violence of the sport and how whenever it looks different, whenever it's different looking violence, everyone freaks out. As opposed to the totally routine violence that has Tua airlifted to a hospital, or has guys strapped to boards and carted off, or has Ryan Shazier walking out years later just being grateful that he can walk again after the violence of this sport.
Partly valid.
I'll say partly.
I would say, though, nothing is still as bad as the Albert Haynesworth stepping on a dude's dome helmetless.
That's very bad.
To me, I think that was still the worst thing I saw.
And what I'm telling you...
I almost forgot about that, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And Ndamukong Suh can line up, and what I'm telling you, though, is that those are the things that you remember, and God, those were bad. But I'm telling you, that's not the worst thing you've seen on a football field. I know it. I know those are not the worst things you've seen on a football field, because we all saw Ryan Shazier, like, there was a real chance he was dead. And that happens every once in a while. If you watch Red Zone tomorrow, there's going to be a time when there's a dude lying motionless on the field and Hanson or Siciliano comes through and says, let's take you over to Titans Jags and see what Nick Foles did for Jacksonville off the bye week. And you go, oh, yeah, okay, good. Oh, touchdown, Red Zone. It's happening all the time in routine ways. That's all. It's a violent sport we're watching. I'm telling you, who did Albert Haynesworth curb stomp? I can't remember.
It was Andre Gouye, G-U-Y-E. It's almost like the cheese, I believe.
Gouyere. Andre Gouyere.
I'm actually pretty sure that may be it.
Anyway, you see guys in and out of concussion protocol, and you saw, you know, like Mitch Morse goes back and forth there three or four times. He's had the concussion protocol stints, right? That's just a dude playing football. He just plays football. And you're like, oh man, I hope he can remember things whenever he's 50. It's a crazy sport. And so we can all be like, yo, Myles Garrett, horrible thing you did there, man. We got to call that out immediately. That was gross. And you're out for the rest of the season, which I'm totally fine with. But to go, that's the worst thing anyone's ever done in football, I think is a bit much. But I'm out here I'm just out here firing takes today. Things I genuinely believe that I know that I'm you know, bringing from the minority position as far as I can tell. Pay college athletes, don't let Myles Garrett hit people in the head, but also football's violent. And we don't have that much show left next segment, so I'll just say Colin Kaepernick should be on a football team and you just get that one out of the way so we don't have to talk about it whenever we come back.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I don't think Sterling knows this, but usually we play this song whenever something has gone horribly wrong, or there's a meltdown of some sort, or the Chiefs have lost to the Titans, or something like that.
It's because I'm on the board.
Well, so playing it for the last segment of today's show actually feels about right. I have not been able to keep up with the last few hours of Colin Kaepernick's workout and all of it moving around everything because I've been here, so don't worry, everyone. Monday. Maybe Tuesday. We'll see. I don't know. I got nothing for you on that front. We don't have a lot of show left altogether at all, so I do want to take a second and look ahead to Chiefs-Chargers coming up on Monday. We'll have coverage for you all day on Monday here on 810. The postgame show will be me and Brad Porter as soon as the game ends. You heard Matt Derrick earlier. If you missed it, you can grab the podcast at 810WHB.com and the 810 mobile app. You heard Matt with, what was it, 76% confidence that the Chiefs would win this game. I'm probably a little bit lower than that, but I don't know why, I suppose. Because I do have a general amount of confidence that some of the stuff that we saw last week will be compartmentalized back into that game as the game where everything went wrong. I think, and the Chiefs are usually good for one or two of these a season. There's one of those games you say, wow, that one's essentially inexplicable. I think there's an argument that the Colts game had elements of that just because the offense was so bad. But the Titans game can be the thing where the offense at the end of the game had a chance to put it away and didn't. You can be pro or against that play on 3rd and 2 to Blake Bell, and to Blake Bell only, and still acknowledge they had a chance to put the game away and then did not do it. The defense seemed to repeat mistakes that it hadn't repeated throughout this season, where it seemed to adjust to fit a defense, to fit the offenses that were coming to town. And we won't have time to play it for you today, but Spagnuolo talked about that a little bit and how he, how offenses can dictate what a defense can do personnel-wise. And I know lots of people have been frustrated by that clip and by Spagnuolo saying that. And it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because you had instances last year where people would freak out because Bob Sutton had Justin Houston dropping back into coverage and he wasn't changing to fit the personnel. So you have your best pass rusher running downfield with some tight end. Well, whenever the Titans give you a personnel set that in your mind, for whatever reason, dictates Reggie Ragland not being on the field, there is a logic to that. Also, you don't want to let an offense completely dictate what you do defensively, even though they get to make those switches first. So, again, there are a handful of complicating factors there, but I didn't leave that explanation from Steve Spagnuolo with a great, frustration that he isn't doing something that every other NFL defensive coordinator does, which is what I was frustrated with Bob Sutton about last year. I know that you want to see Reggie Ragland out there whenever Derrick Henry is out there and there's a chance that he could run the ball in the second half. I don't know why there wasn't more of that. I still have lots of questions about how they ended up going from point A to point B of sticking with how the Titans were dictating things. But I'm not deeply deflated. I'm not out on the Chiefs defense just yet. Seeing what they do against the Chargers will be fascinating. I think both sides of the ball have a nice little bounce back game. The special teams have to be better. We'll talk about it, though, all day Friday here, Monday here on 810. We'll talk about it after the game there as well. Until then, bye, Mom.